Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to plan a wedding that is beautiful, memorable, and excruciatingly proper? The American wedding industry, which takes in about $86 billion a year, is heavily invested in convincing engaged couples and their guests that the extravagant trappings of a blowout wedding are nothing less than a requirement for anybody who cares about decorum. But is that actually true? We're spending this hour with one of the foremost arbiters of etiquette in contemporary America, Miss Manners columnist and author Judith Martin. Her latest book, written with her newlywed daughter Jacobina Martin, is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. Miss Martin, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much.
Why is it that Americans who are comfortable with dispensing with the traditional rules of etiquette in other arenas suddenly become so concerned about getting it right when they get married?
I find that amusing because suddenly they're using what they think is etiquette to deal with the underlying emotions of a wedding. So people will fight over ridiculously non-consequential things or things that etiquette has no interest in whatsoever. Who's supposed to occupy the third pew and or the do the fifth dance? And they will go to war over those things. And I think it's just general nervousness about the fact of getting married. But many of the things that they think are points of etiquette are either not or they are mistaken about them because they have been fed the idea that a lot of very improper things are not only proper but required. So I'm fighting back now.
I can only imagine the kinds of stories that you hear. How are you able to sort of retain your faith in humanity when people write to you with these outrageous questions?
Well, one of the ways is that the victims of this write to me, and I feel the need to defend them. The people who have been told they have to spend money they don't have, whether it's the bride and bridegroom themselves or the families or the guests, the people who have been told that they absolutely must do this or that. And it speaks to something vulnerable in them, and it's simply wrong. It's wrong, wrong, wrong. The idea that a wedding has to be egotistical and vulgar and flaunting one's own wishes over everybody else's is against every principle of etiquette.
Yeah, you write here that there is no need for a festival to showcase one's personality and that the only appropriate theme for a wedding is marriage.
Exactly so. That came actually from my new son-in-law, who said he was asked, what's the theme of the wedding going to be? And he said, marriage. We're getting married. But you see, people have turned it into some kind of drama, sometimes even a costume drama. And they're not necessarily experienced in show business, which oddly enough my daughter is, but had no desire to make her wedding into a drama.
Is it still appropriate in 2010 for anyone to assume that the bride's family might take on the lion's share of paying for a wedding?
You know, the idea that etiquette is passing out the bills, and so this one has to pay this, the other one has to pay that, is wrong. We are not in that business. You're talking about members of families, of two families. Who knows what their resources are, what they can comfortably do? Well, they do, right? So they should get together and see what is feasible, and you can divide it any way you want. I'm not going to peek into that. There are the couple may assume some expenses, the bridegroom's family may assume some expenses, or the bride's family may pay it all, but it should be according to who can do it comfortably as they decide. One of the awful things that starts family fights is when people say, well, the bride's groom family is supposed to pay this, and therefore, you know, they just hand them the bill for something that they were not consulted about. or the bride's family, or any of them for that matter. People have charge of their own money, and so therefore they should decide among themselves what they want to do and what each of them can comfortably do or not do.
And I guess none of this would be such a source of stress if weddings hadn't become such over-the-top affairs. How did we get to this place where even people of very modest means expect to have 250 people at a seated dinner?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. One is that formality has just about been erased from every other aspect of life. And people crave some variety of style. And even the ones who say, well, I'm a very informal type of person and so on. Young women who've never worn a skirt in their lives suddenly decide they want a $5,000 dress that they're going to wear for about a few hours. I think they crave the formality. And then my co-author and daughter gave me a great insight on this. I said to her, you know, when I got married, everything about my life changed. My name changed. Certainly the place I lived changed. I was certainly not living with my husband before we were married. And now, in many cases, nothing changes. They may not change their names. They may already be living together. They may already have children together. So why is the wedding itself such a big deal? And she said, that's why. Because nothing changes. You have to make a tremendous emphasis on the fact that they are now married.
That's a remarkable insight. It makes a lot of sense.
I thought so. That was the insight that made me say, will you do this book with me?
Did she express to you or to anybody any particular sense of obligation to get things right as the daughter of Miss Manners?
We don't think of ourselves this way, and the wedding guests were all our relatives or friends of the couple, friends of the family. Everybody there knows us very well, so this is not a public demonstration. Of course, the people who know us well know that we do things correctly. We can't help ourselves.
You advocate for the idea that we should have at our weddings the people who are dear to us as opposed to a huge list of people who must be invited. But there's always that question of if you're close to a coworker, but another coworker who you are not friends with finds out, there will be bad blood, and suddenly, you know, 50 people turns into 300 people.
The test is, your coworkers, is this somebody you see socially ordinarily? And I'm not talking about a few drinks after work or a company retreat or something business related. Are these people, here's the big test, if you were fired tomorrow, would you still continue to see them? And then they're friends, and then they should be invited. And if they're not, then they do not need to be invited.
Wedding gifts are a major issue for people on all sides, and we're playing here, it seems, with a sort of odd cat-and-mouse game between the couple and their guests, because couples are obligated not to expect a gift at all. Guests, on the other hand, are really obligated to give one.
One of the little paradoxes of etiquette, that people have thrown that aside, and it is now said, well, if you're going to be thoughtful of your guests, you tell them what to buy you. Well, again, this is against all tenets of etiquette, and it's against the very idea of what a present should be. You know, the old mantra is, it's the thought that counts, meaning the thought somebody else thought about you and thought what would please you, and not that you thought about yourself and told them what to get you. You know, they miss a lot when they do this. I mean, a lot of couples feel very proud of themselves. They've gotten a whole list of things that they wanted. I was married, it'll be 50 years ago in a couple of weeks, and I still associate various things in my house with the people who gave them to me. If I had made a list and just distributed around and everybody got me what I had chosen, I wouldn't have the slightest idea of associating it with a person.
You tell a horrifying story of someone who not only wanted specific items, but went back after the wedding and billed the guests, invoiced the guests who had not apparently sent a gift.
Yes, isn't that what we've come to? That idea that you can mandate what you get has grown and grown in disgusting ways, one of which you mentioned there, but there are all sorts of ways in which people practice extortion on their wedding guests. And the fact that they go into debt for their weddings gives them a grudge against the guests and feel and the thought that the guests ought to make some return on that. This is against all the tenets of hospitality.
You also say that it's not proper for couples to ask for no gifts.
That's a delicate thing. I have great sympathy with the people who want to do that. They have the best intentions of the world. However, it shows your thinking, oh, well, they could give me a present, but I'm going to let them off. And it has come to be useless. I have been on the receiving end of a lot of letters saying, well, doesn't no gifts mean you should give cash? So it's useless as well as not quite right. But I'd say I really like the people who ask if they can do that much better than the people who ask, can I put cash only at the bottom of the invitation?
Yeah, I've seen that in a couple where people say, you can pitch into our honeymoon fund. And I've done it, but I always feel a little icky about it.
Well, of course you feel icky about it. I would feel icky about going on a honeymoon if I couldn't afford it.
What do you think, where did this nonsense come from that couples have a year to write their thank you notes?
It's a perversion of the fact that you actually have a year to give a wedding present, which in these days of unsteady marriage might come in handy. You have about 20 minutes to write a thank you letter when you receive something. The idea that people don't need to know even that the present arrived, much less that you liked it, until a year later when they've long since forgotten what they gave and why, is just, it's one of these urban legends, and it's wrong.
And in fact, because couples typically will open presents as they arrive, if a gift comes a month before the wedding, it's fine to write a thank you note before you've walked down the aisle.
Of course. When a present comes, you thank the person for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much common sense does that take? If you handed me something, would I run off with it and come back a year later and say, oh, by the way, thank you?
You have also reminded us that a tasteful thank you note never begins with the words, thank you for.
Right. Because then it's so obviously rote. But there's worse going on. There are people who send out a generic letter saying, thank you for your gift. Right?
I saw that in the book there was a little form letter.
Yeah, yes. I mean, isn't that amazing? The excuse is always, well, they're very busy. Well, the person who gave you the present took time to select a present, unless, of course, they're following your orders. But even so, they took the time and spent the money to send you the present. And they have busy lives, too. If you're too busy to thank your friends, you don't deserve to have any.
How did thank you note writing become such a lost art?
Well, writing letters at all was a lost art for a long time. I'm hoping that because people are now in the habit of writing in the form of texting and email, that they will catch on to the fact that you can do that same thing by using a technologically obscure items such as paper and pens and ink.
My guest this hour is Judith Martin. She is the columnist who writes Miss Manners, and she's written several books. Her newest, written with her daughter, Jacobina Martin, is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. We'll resume the conversation in a couple of minutes, and you're welcome to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Miss Manners columnist and author Judith Martin. Her newest book, written with her daughter Jacobina Martin, is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. You can join the conversation at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. What is the traditional role of those in the bridal party? What are their obligations?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the makeup of the bridal party. That's one of the things that needs to be changed. People always incorrectly assume I want to go backwards in time to a perfect pattern of, a wedding of whenever they think that was. But there are some peculiarly old-fashioned ideas about the wedding party. That, for instance, it has to be a man who gives the bride away. In this day and age when there are so many single mothers who heroically brought up their daughters alone, and then they just go out and find some man to give her away, even though it was the mother who brought her up. So the bridal party should consist of, if she's to be given away by the parent who reared her, or the father if he's there, but if not, certainly the mother, or both. The attendants should be the couple's close friends and sometimes relatives, regardless of gender. So that's in the first place. And then they are not slaves. They are not supposed to be ordered. It's totally optional if bridesmaids, for example, want to give parties, such as showers. The bride is not supposed to tell them to do it, as she often does these days. And what's more, mandate something expensive that they all are supposed to chip in and pay for. They are not supposed to necessarily run errands for her. If they're close friends and they're treated nicely, they might take an interest in the wedding and want to help her. But otherwise, the job is to show up at the wedding, smile, and somebody holds her bouquet while she needs her hands free to get her wedding ring.
And you're not a fan of demanding that all the bridesmaids pick out a dress and wear the same thing?
I think it looks silly. It looks like a chorus line. At my daughter's wedding last April, all the bridesmaids said, what should they wear? And she said, wear a dress that you really feel good in, that you like. And they all showed up beautifully dressed, I have to say. They did not match. But on the other hand, they are not a chorus line. They did not all kick their legs in the air in the same direction either.
Incidentally, we have an email here from Larry in Dallas who asks what you think about the now famous YouTube video of the wedding party dancing down the aisle. Have you seen that?
I did see it. If they got exuberant and did it, okay, after the ceremony. I don't remember. Did they dance toward the ceremony?
I believe so.
Yeah, that, I really don't like to trash other people's weddings. So let's not talk specifically about that couple. But in general, people should realize that there's a separation between the ceremony, which should be serious and dignified, and the celebration, which can be exuberant and should be.
We have an email here from Jessica in Denton who says, I once worked as a wedding planner, and inevitably, many of the brides insisted on a money dance at the reception, where the guests pay the bride, or the groom in some cases, to dance for a moment. I always thought this was a practice that was at best indecorous and at worst vulgar. It seemed the couple was using it as an opportunity to make money. One bride insisted on the tradition, saying it was an ethnic custom. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm getting awfully tired of this ethnic custom excuse. It's very nice to have the customs you grew up with, but this is an ethnic custom among extortionists. It is not for example, people say, well, it's an Italian custom. Oh, no, it's not. I spent a lot of time in Italy. Not among respectable people, it's not. That's in the first place. In the second place, if you're going to rent the bride out, you could probably find a way to make more money.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Judith Martin, Miss Manners, is our guest this hour. Her newest book is called Miss Manners Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. Let's go to Angie in Plano. Hey, Angie.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm just wondering, if I'm really late in writing some thank you notes, the event was in June, what is a tactful way to approach that when writing the thank you note to the person?
Well, first of all, you don't say you've been busy because they've been busy too. And saying, I'm too busy to have noticed you and the fact that you did something for me is not charming. What you do in this case, which we both know should not occur, but it did, what you do in this case is you say, I continue to get so much pleasure out of the wonderful What's It that you sent me. And I never properly told you how grateful I am and how much I enjoy it.
Is there any way to handle, if you have a big enough wedding, there's inevitably a gift that comes without a card attached or it's been lost and you don't know who it came from and who to thank for it?
That is one of the few almost insoluble problems. You have to do a word of mouth thing and tell everybody, oh, I got the most lovely whatever, and there was no card. And eventually, if you say that often enough, you'll not only bore everybody to death, but you will find out who sent it.
We have an email here from Alexis in Arlington who writes, my husband and I attended two weddings in the fall. Both were out of town and required us to spend a substantial amount of money simply to attend. We thought our presence was the most important gesture of our affection, not a gift. So even though both couples had wedding registries, we did not give either couple a present. Were we rude in not giving a gift?
Well, as we said earlier, there's this funny little paradox that gifts, on the one hand, are not compulsory, and on the other hand, they are customary, and one does. I certainly wouldn't stretch financially. Give them a charming present that costs very little, like a photograph of themselves in a pretty frame, or a charming edition of a book of that you think they might enjoy, or I don't know, love poetry, whatever. You find something that seems thoughtful but is not expensive. And the fact that people do have to spend huge amounts of money to get to a wedding is partly sign of the times. People live all over, and the bride and bridegroom probably did not meet because they played together as children living next door. But it's often made unnecessarily hard by these so-called destination weddings,
yeah.
And which is a terrific imposition financially on the guests.
Yeah, and then you'll hear brides furious at friends who say, I'm sorry, I just can't afford to go.
Well, that's their fault. I mean, who? It's time and money. Do you really, it's not very charming to go to a wedding, but do you really want to take your vacation days and your savings in order to go?
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll speak next with Carolyn in Dallas. Hello, Carolyn.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm just calling to ask if a couple marries at home with just immediate family members, is it proper to send out wedding announcements later? Does that look like you're just asking for a gift? And if you receive such an announcement, are you expected to accept send a gift?
Yeah, thanks for your call.
A funny thing has happened to wedding announcements. They used to be commonplace. You sent them to people you thought would be interested in hearing this. But who did not were not invited to the wedding, and there were no hurt feelings. Now there are lots of hurt feelings because people are saying, "Well, if I wasn't good enough to be invited to the wedding, what do I care?" I certainly the instance you mention is a very legitimate reason for having wedding announcements and letting people know. But wedding announcements. The only obligation on the person who receives one is to write a letter of congratulations and best wishes. If they want to give a present, fine, but it is not as customary as it is when you attend a wedding.
You remind us here that it is never acceptable to leave someone off the reception guest list who has been invited to attend the ceremony. Is the opposite also true?
Yes, and that's another new custom. it used to be commonplace to invite people either to the reception and then have and not to the ceremony, which would be known as a private ceremony, or to invite a lot of people to the ceremony and a few people to the reception. I find that inherently rude, and I wouldn't do it nowadays. I think everybody else would consider it rude also. If you are invited to attend the wedding, you should be invited to celebrate it.
Is it all right to say that children are not invited?
You don't issue non-invitations. People who are invited are the people whose names are on the invitation, not all their children, not their wonderful new people they just met on the internet, not all their relatives. It's just the people whose names appear. Now, there are people who, like my daughter, who loved having children at the wedding, and there are others who don't. You don't have to. But if you are pressured, it should be by people who want to bring their children, you should be able to say, I'm so sorry, we're not having any children. You should not pick and choose.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org. We have an email from Lindsay in Fort Worth who writes, my husband and I eloped a few years ago. My family is spread out and his is overseas, so having a wedding was logistically complicated. Now we're really interested in having a dedication ceremony similar to a wedding. Any advice or resources that you would recommend?
Have an anniversary party. There is this notion that everybody is entitled to at least one big formal wedding, and if they decide not to have it when they get married, they can have it some other time. No, it's a big wedding, a formal wedding, is because people are getting married. You can give as gala and formal an anniversary party as you choose, but don't call it a wedding, and I'm not sure what you mean by a dedication ceremony. If you've been married several years and you're not dedicated to each other, there's something terribly wrong.
How are the rules different for second weddings?
Well, I get uncharacteristically lenient there. In theory, a second wedding should be quiet and less formal, but people want the big formal wedding, and they say, well, but this is my real wedding, like the other one was pretend or something. But I don't throw a damper on it as long as their guests are tolerant.
What?
And if there's some reluctance to come to your fourth big splashy wedding, you should understand it. People are getting sick of it.
White dress is still okay for the bride?
Well, the idea that the white dress symbolized the unused state of the body underneath was always extremely vulgar, and I'm very glad it's gone. So it's now associated just with being a bride. It used to be associated with being a bride for the first time. As I say, I tend to get lenient on this, but you know your own guess better and whether they would feel the same way.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest this hour is Miss Manners columnist and author Judith Martin. Let's go next to Susan in Dallas. Hello, Susan.
Hi. My question is about more mature couples getting married. It'll be my second, my fiance's third. We're in our 50s, and we have friends who talk about showers and parties. Parties are fine. But, you know, getting gifts, we're just really uncomfortable with that. We're not setting up household. Again, you know, we're in our 50s. So, but then it's just uncomfortable. We don't know how to respond to that.
It's very kind of your friends to want to celebrate. And it's they who are saying it, not you. But I would gently suggest to them that they get together and maybe throw one party or not call something a shower. People always want to use that term about shower, a shower, but that always means presents. And if it's just a party that they want to say, well, we're so pleased that you're getting married and we'd like to honor you at a party, then I think it's perfectly all right. But I would discourage anything that smacks of getting presents. Some people will bring them anyway. but you shouldn't look as if you are setting up a household for the first time, because you're not.
Is there any polite way to sort of spread word of mouth that you would be fine if no one brought a gift?
That word of mouth is the way to do it. And you get your relatives and friends to say, oh, no, they really have everything. Really don't expect anything, please. They would rather you didn't. It's hard to say it yourself, but you can. You can say, you know, we have a going household. Really would prefer that people not do this. But then you have to be gracious if they do it anyway.
800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Tanya in Belton. Hi, Tanya.
Hi. My question is, I had a girlfriend invite me to her wedding back in April. My husband and I were unable to make it and kept meaning to get her a gift one thing after another. I just haven't gotten her a gift yet. I had my wedding in September, and she graciously got us a gift and, of course, thanked her for that. Just wondering what's the best way to go about giving her her gift and, you know, kind of apologizing for being so late about it.
You actually don't need to apologize, because even though she was prompt, it's perfectly all right within the first year to give somebody a wedding present. And just send her a nice present and with your warmest congratulations, and you need not apologize.
Some people prefer to give cash, not because they're ordered to do so by the bridal couple. Is that vulgar?
Well, you always know how much it costs, don't you? it kind of is, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's always the hardship case that grandma is confined to her house and can't possibly shop and doesn't know anybody will do it for her, and so she slips them a little money and whatnot, and I hope people would be gracious about it. But the point of a present is it's symbolic, and cash is not symbolic of anything except I guess you could use the money.
Miss Manners, Judith Martin, is my guest this hour. Her new book is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. We'll take more of your calls after the break. You can get to us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of non-credit personal enrichment and professional development courses begin this spring. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Miss Manners columnist and author Judith Martin is my guest this hour. Her new book is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Nancy in Plano who writes, I was invited to a shower but not the wedding a few years ago and felt very slighted. Was I overreacting?
No, you were slighted. Presumably, the people who are eager to shower a bride with all kinds of things for her new life are close enough to her to want to witness this ceremony, unless it was a family-only ceremony or an elopement. The natural expectation, if there's a sizable wedding, is that the same people who cared about her enough to go to the shower care enough to go to the wedding.
You're not particularly fond of elopements.
I wouldn't say that. It's just that people who elope because they think the only alternative is this huge, expensive, showy wedding, I just want them to know that there are other alternatives. And I think that one does want, wants one's family and friends around one, but there could be perfectly good reasons not to. And so I have nothing against elopement. I don't think it's, as I say, the only way to avoid a lifelong debt, nor do I think that you have to feel that you have to invite everybody you know to a wedding or nobody. You should be able to have a wedding of people that you really care about. But as I say, I can understand that Romeo and Juliet needed to elope.
Didn't work out in the end.
No. But the wedding their parents had planned for them didn't work out either, did it?
Let's go next to Blake in Dallas. Hello, Blake.
Hi. I have a couple friends who are getting married, and they're a same-sex couple. And I guess we want to have a wedding that incorporates a lot of elements of a traditional marriage, but because I guess it's not a traditional marriage, we were sort of scratching our heads on how we can incorporate some of the ideas of family and I guess community.
Which ideas do you mean? Which ideas?
I'm sorry.
Which ideas do you mean?
Oh, I guess specifically in terms of the family giving away the spouse or the.
Well, one graceful way to do it would be to have both sets of parents accompany the person who's getting married, each of them. That's done anyway in Jewish weddings, and a lot of other people have adopted that simply because they feel the mother is as important as the father. So they have both both parents give them away, and this can be done for both of them.
So there's not really necessarily any difference in how, except as the couple wishes, in how a same-sex marriage takes place.
No, I mean, the point is that it's marriage. And when you talk about traditional, I mean, there are all kinds of traditions from all kinds of periods, and some of them have survived in spite of the fact that they're somewhat illogical. Some of them have died out in spite of the fact that they were sensible. And if you want to have a formal wedding, usually the people are in the attire of their gender, both of them. You don't pretend that this is a heterosexual wedding. But otherwise, you use the traditions in a sensible way. The parents can give them away. Their friends are their attendants, male or female, or a mixture of both. It's not that hard.
Another big trend in the past decade or so that I find somewhat terrifying is the fact that a lot of brides now have these sort of Vogue magazine photo shoots, either before or after the wedding. Do you have any thoughts about tasteful bridal portraits? Is it fine if they want to model themselves?
Well, there are a number fine to have bridal pictures, of course, although you may be sure that nobody after the first month will look at them. Except your eventual children who will laugh themselves silly at how dated they look. What is rude is when people take time out of the between the ceremony and the reception and neglect their guests in order to get photographs. And what's silly is if they have all kinds of schemes to take outlandish pictures. I'm thinking of a really peculiar custom by which they have wedding pictures taken afterwards in where they trash the dress, where she wears it hiking or something like that,
right,
and ruins it. And a lot of people seem to think that's amusing. Well, that is not part of the wedding itself, and whatever foolish things they do afterwards is really not my business. But taking time from the wedding and ignoring the guests in order to have an extended photo opportunity really kind of defeats the purpose of having the wedding itself. If the so-called memories of it, and the memories ought to be what's in people's heads, but if the mementos are disrupt the actual event, you've got your priorities wrong.
Let's go next to Mary in Fort Worth. Hello, Mary.
Hi. First of all, let me say, Miss Manners, I love you.
Oh,
just
thank
last
you.
Night, I was reading Guide to the Millennium and wondering where you had gone. So thank you for coming back.
Here I am, and thank you very much.
You bet. My question has to do with gift registry. I get kind of rankled sometimes at being told what I had to purchase as a present. I went to a shower, and somebody had made a lovely photo collage, and they kind of were made to feel like they were shabby, and I just kind of wanted your take on gift registry.
Somebody made a photo collage as a present, and that was considered shabby? It seems to me that's that you ought to be considered extremely thoughtful and charming. And my whole thought about the registry is, and this was your instinct too, it is very rude to tell people what to give you. It's their money. It's their choice. They do what they like. They are not a source of income or furnishing your house or sponsoring your honeymoon or anything. They're not responsible for your bills. If they choose to give you something, it should be of their own choice.
I think maybe my favorite line in the book is when you remark that the stores will still be open after the ceremony.
Yes.
Let's go next to Fort Worth and speak with Jamie. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. My question regards showers. I have a coworker who has become a casual friend, and I was invited to an all-girls shower for her, and then we're giving her a shower at work. I received another shower invitation, and now I've received my fourth, and it's very clear the expectation is that I give a gift to each one. And I'm getting a little uncomfortable with this.
I should think so. I should think so. Stop accepting these invitations. They should not have been issued. People should be invited to one shower, not half a dozen or whatever it is, not even two, except for the bridesmaids. And they should even just give one little present as a shower present, which, by the way, used to be trivial, charming little presents, and now they've grown into something like a second wedding present. So my advice to you is to thank them very much and start refusing these invitations.
So if you attend a second shower, you do bring a gift, or can you simply...
You do, but but why are you attending a second shower, really? You've told the bride you're delighted, you've shown up at a party for her, and enough is enough.
We have an email from Bill in Dallas who asks, what is the proper way to make a toast? I've been used to the idea of simply raising one's glass without touching. Is the proper that's the proper method, but I find many people insist on touching glasses.
Well, two people who are toasting each other touch their glasses. If you're getting up to give a wedding toast, which I presume is what you're talking about there, you simply raise your glass. I mean, yes, there's the custom of touching the glass, but it is very impractical in a crowd, and you're sloshing perfectly good champagne all over the tablecloth. But if you raise, say, at a table of people at a wedding party, you all raise your glasses to one another and smile. That will do.
Let's go next to William in Fort Worth. Hi, William.
Hi there. I have a question for Ms. Martin about kind of on the lines of obligation of families as it pertains to planning of weddings and setting up of weddings. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. my brother will be shortly getting married, and my wife's mother has received an invitation and also kind of being let known and not necessarily asked that she would be expected to help set up the wedding and actually do work instead of just attend. And this is somebody that would be traveling across the nation to do the wedding. I was wondering Ms. Martin's ideas about this.
Your brother thinks that your mother-in-law is obligated to help out at his wedding?
Well, it's actually his fiancée.
or even less so. That is very strange. If she's invited as a guest, she should be a guest, period. And even on close relationships, which this by no means is,
It is voluntary on everybody's part, and they should either volunteer or not volunteer. The idea that there's an expectation that you can press gang people work on a wedding is ridiculous, and certainly in this case with this remote connection.
Do the bride and groom have an obligation to leave the reception at a decent hour so everyone else can go home and get some sleep?
Well, that did not used to be a problem because they used to want to be alone together. Now they've probably been alone together and maybe with their children for years. So the rule that nobody else can leave the wedding until the bride and bridegroom do has had to be seriously relaxed. Or because the bride and bridegroom, they're all our friends. We've got nothing else to do. Let's, dance all night. So after the cutting of the wedding cake, if people have had enough, we now let them go.
Peter asks, is it rude or okay to invite more people after receiving notification that some guests will not be able to make it?
We have a sneaky little thing in the etiquette business. If nobody finds out, it's okay. If they do find out, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's you're inviting them 2 days before the wedding, then they've found out. If you're beginning to get replies and they're so you send someone a wedding invitation a month before the wedding instead of 6 weeks, it's probably okay.
If someone has been left off the list for whatever reason and then says, well, I didn't receive my invitation, and then the couple feels obligated to sort of reinvite them, how much truth should be used in expressing that new invitation?
There's a phrase that I think everybody connected with the wedding of whatever size should memorize and use at every possible opportunity, which is, it's a very small wedding. Now, small is a relative thing. I mean, 300 people is small compared to 1,000. You should keep saying, we'd love to have you, but it's a very small wedding.
Daniel in Dallas wants to know about the practice of requesting that in lieu of gifts, people consider a donation to a particular cause.
And they feel very virtuous when they do this, but I do not care for it. It's still spending other people's money. And it may be a cause that they are not interested in or that they might even oppose. Who knows? But it is not up to them to tell people how to spend their money, whether they spend it for them or in a very, very worthy cause. If the couple wants to support a charity, they can go all sell all their wedding gifts and donate the money to the charity, but they can't tell other people to do it.
What plays into a wedding that you really enjoy as opposed to one that you leave unimpressed with?
Well, when you feel, as a wedding guest, that you are part of something and not an audience for people who are giving their bio-epic show or making you wait around while they go off by themselves or whatever. If you care about the people and you really feel a part of it, and it is dignified, it will probably produce misty eyes during the ceremony and a lot of huge, happy smiles during the reception.
Judith Martin writes the nationally syndicated Miss Manners columns. Her latest book, written with her newly married daughter, Jacobina Martin, is called Miss Manners' Guide to a Surprisingly Dignified Wedding. Miss Martin, it's been a genuine pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it very much myself.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.